his hammer. Tell him I'm gone. Tell him I'm gone, baby. Honey, go. Here is you. Am I running? Tell him I'm fine. Baby, flying, mama.
Welcome to the Circumference Podcast Series. I'm your host, Montana Ray, and today I have the honor of talking to Gautam Datta, Yusuf Komunyakaa, and Shubhad Sarkar. By way of an introduction, perhaps Yusuf and Gautam, while we're waiting for Shubhad, you could tell me where you are from and describe the landscape of that place.
My name is Yusuf Komunyakaa. I grew up in Bogalusa, Louisiana. And some may say it's rather bucolic. It's a small town, rural, country place that taught me a lot about writing, I think.
Yeah, I grew up in India, and actually in West Bengal, a state of India, and I'm an urban boy. I grew up kind of really uncommon for Indian immigrant. I'm a kind of ghetto boy. I grew up in a ghetto. And we're working class people, and street fights are very common. Like, and funny thing, like when I first time came to this country, I came to Newark, I saw the same reflection of the life.
Yeah, urban environment, right? Contrast mine completely.
Excellent, thank you both. Gautam, you compiled an anthology of poetry by African-American poets and then facilitated the translation of that poetry into Bengali. The book is called I Do Not Want My Freedom When I Am Dead. Why work with African-American poets in particular?
Before coming to this country, I knew that difference in caste, but I didn't have any idea difference between the black and white. When we were growing up, one of the gentlemen was very famous in Calcutta, is the Paul Robeson. When we were students, we were doing student movement, we sang, they don't let you sing your song, Paul Robeson. I traveled for my job, many different countries, and I saw also United States portrays a wrongfully, or the majority's culture, which is the, you know, white culture. Mm. I saw that there is the absence of the real reflections of the minority culture and the multiculturalism of this country, which is enriches this culture. So I thought that it would be a good thing to put together an African-American poetry anthology. Yusuf was teaching that time in Princeton University. I came in contact with him through Dodge Festival, and Yusuf and Rita Dav, you know, guided me. That's how the whole anthology came up.
Great.
So I think it's interesting you say Robeson, because Robeson is my hero, you know, because he just stood up to McCarthyism to an extent. Wrote a very interesting book called Here I Stand. Of course, J. Edgar Hoover was in his back pocket always. And Robeson is an international person.
Yes.
I think he sang songs in about 24 languages, which is just amazing when one thinks about it. And it feeds right into the importance of translation.
Who are some of the poets you included in the anthology?
It's not possible to put everyone together.
Maybe three. How about, well, set a limit.
Oh, of course, the Langston Hughes.
It starts off with W. Du Bois.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. Which is another important voice in India, interestingly enough.
Du Bois, Paul Laurence Dunbar, Claude Mackay, Fenton Johnson, John Thumar, Sterling Brown, Langston Hughes, Robert Hedden, Brooks, Bob Kaufman, Maya Angelou, Amiri Baraka, Sonia Sanchez, then Yusuf Generation, Yusuf, Rita Dav, Kaveh Kanam founder, Toy Derekat, then Nikki Giovanni, Elizabeth Alexander, Nikki Finney. Then I read, actually no one recommended her, but I read her poem and I found her poem very interesting. Natasha Trewe, all the way up to Kevin Young.
Okay, so this is a good sneak peek.
Exactly. Right. From the old, you know, yeah. When you're doing anthology, you can't include everyone. It's not nothing bias or anything.
Right.
It's just luck, I would say.
It was a small anthology. One looks at it, but at the same time, it has a great depth and breadth. I think initially it sold out, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Yusuf was nice enough, actually. He donated to about 1,700 libraries in Bengal, the book. He bought the book and he donated the books.
Gautam, could we hear one of the poems from the anthology? Would you read Langston Hughes's poem, Jukebox Love Song, in Bengali?
Jukebox Bhalobashar Gaan, Gautam Dotto. আমি এই হার্লেমের রাত্রি নিয়ে জড়াব তোমার গায়ে, নিয়ন বাতিগুলো খুলে পড়াব মুকুট তোমার মাথায়, এই লেনক্স অ্যাভিনিউয়ের বাস, ট্যাক্সি, সাবওয়ে, ট্রেন, সবাই তোমার ভালোবাসার গানের সুরে নাচতে নাচতে দৌড়োয়। চলো হার্লেমের হৃৎস্পন্দন চুরি করে ড্রামের লহরায় পুরি, রেকর্ড করি বাজুক রেকর্ড, ঘুরুক বন বন ঘুরুক, তুমি আর আমি শুনি, নাচতে থাকি তোমার সঙ্গে দিনের শেষে, আমি নাচি তোমার সঙ্গে, আমার মিষ্টি খয়েরি হার্লেম মেয়ে।
And here's Gautam reading his translation of The Crazy Woman by Gwendolyn Brooks.
পাগলি মেয়ে, গৌতম দত্ত। আমি আর গাইব না মে মাসের গান, মে মাসের গানে আলো ঝলমল করে আমার অপেক্ষা ক্লান্ত নভেম্বর মাস, তখন গাইব যত বিষাদ সঙ্গীত। আমার অপেক্ষা শুধু নভেম্বর মাস, আমার সময় এটা আমার বিশ্বাস। বরফ সন্ধ্যের মধ্যে আমি হেঁটে যাই, গান গাই বেসুরো গলায়, আর সব ছোট ছোট মানুষের দল তাকিয়ে আমার দিকে কানাকানি করে। ওই সেই পাগলি মেয়ে, দেখ পাগলি মেয়ে, ও যে আর মে মাসেতে গাইবে না গান।
You're listening to the Circumference podcast series. We just heard two poems from the anthology, I Do Not Want My Freedom When I Am Dead, African American poetry translated into Bengali. We're joined now by Shubhad Sarkar, a great poet from Calcutta. Shubhad, we've been discussing exchanges between American poets and poets in India. I know that Yusuf and Gautam organized a delegation of American poets to visit the Calcutta Book Fair. Could you describe the book fair for us?
The Calcutta Book Fair is the largest open-air book fair in the world. And you have millions of people waiting outside in queues. They're waiting for tickets to enter the book fair. And this is amazing, you know. I believe that, you know, you have international book fairs like Frankfurt Book Fairs or Moscow International Book Fair. I have visited. But I tell you, you don't have that life at Frankfurt or Moscow Book Fair. But the moment you are near the book fair ground in Calcutta, you feel the whirlwind of emotions all over the city. And people are coming from different directions. And students, professors, old men, old women.
Thank you, Shubhad. Gautam?
Even the ultimate Muslim religion flag is running next to a red flag of Marxist Communist Party. Mm. You see Hare Krishna, Hare Ram.
Yeah.
And you see American Embassy. So it's like, it's a mingle of books. You see that Muslim women with a burqa and their children. On, I have the picture. On the grass, and they are reading Tintin. and there's a celebration of books.
Yeah.
The books from all over, you know, it's from England, from Germany, from France, from America. USA participated, you know, as theme country, participated twice or three times.
I think there's a host. I think it was Germany.
That year.
Gunter Grass.
Yeah. Gunter Grass was there.
You and Gunter Grass came at the same time at the airport. I remember that, yes.
And I received him. It was midnight, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yusuf, what were some of your impressions of the fair?
I was very surprised by the number of people and the kind of enthusiasm for literature. But I think it's also indicative of that one street, College Street, where there are so many publishers and what have you. The U.S. consulate, as I remember, read or recited a poem by Langston Hughes.
Yeah.
So is that kind of participation?
Our delegation is all private initiative. We do not have government backing. We do not have anything. It's just so the very relevant subject. U.S. Embassy, why they are most headed embassies in the third world countries? Because U.S. Embassy people behave like they're kings, and all over India they are most hated. Go to any third world country, they're most hated. They didn't join, U.S. Embassy didn't join to the book fair till we forced, and Yusuf's friend was there. What's his name? The ambassador. We kind of forced them to join.
Sibley.
Yeah. We kind of forced them to join. They were so snob, they wouldn't join the book fair. Mm-hmm. Every other country is joining. So even like when we went there as a delegation, they were fighting with us. They won't allow us to represent the U.S.
Which other poets did you bring from the U.S. to participate in the delegation?
So we took a delegation of Yusuf, Bob Holman, mm-hmm. Catherine went with us, myself,
Caroline
Forche, then Joy Harjo, Idra Nove, then Nathalie Handal.
Ed Padgett.
It was a team of 12 writers?
Chris Merrill. Iowa has the international department of... and this is world famous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the Iowa workshop started off as an international workshop.
Exactly. Yes. That's the world famous international workshop. Mm-hmm. They bring people from over 34, 36, up to 40 countries, journalist, writer, poet, every year. And they give them 3 months of residency mm-hmm. and food and a lodging and some stipend. They're just free to write whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to write, they don't have to write. Mm-hmm. But they exchange and think, and they go back with a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. And this is going on for many, many years. And Chris Merrill is the director of that program. Chris went with us.
Shubha, do you have a particular memory of interacting with the American delegates?
We were not in Calcutta. We were at Shantiniketan. You know, that is a famous, world-famous place in connection with Tagore. You know. It was Tagore's place, university, right? And it's 100 kilometers away from Calcutta. It's far from the madding crowd. And we were in a village. Mm. And it was Joy Harjo, right? She was playing...
The saxophone.
Yeah, saxophone. Yeah. And she was dancing with the tribals, with the... of that area, and we all joined her. Tribal people, they all came, and we told them that they're all poets from America, and they were so happy without understanding anything. Mm-hmm. And Joy was playing saxophone, mm-hmm. and we were all dancing in accompaniment with the mm-hmm. tunes. And finally, it became a kind of concert, you know, mm-hmm. dancing and music and poetry. And so that was amazing. I was really happy because I was very tense that time because there was a bund. Mm. You know, it's called bund. What is
strike.
American
strike.
Equivalent of
strike?
Bund?
Strike,
you know. So, you know, there was no transportation. There was no communication. There was in between Calcutta and where we were staying, you know, 100 kilometers away from Calcutta. And we were all together. We were really tense. And finally, we took the train.
The
train. It was the first train, possibly.
5 a.m.
5 a.m. Yeah, it's not yet the sun in the sky.
Right.
And we were all waiting for the train. It was dark. And finally, the train.
It was dark on
the platform. And finally, the train arrived. And we came back home. So I think this is a beautiful moment, and it's a great thing. I cannot forget it.
Wonderful.
I remember that moment.
Yeah,
it was really amazing.
it's
really inside my
also
psyche.
How the tribal language they can communicate, because we had a really a jazz player with us, with saxo, and jazz player could not play the saxophone with the tribal music.
Yeah.
But Joy heard you. Completely blended in with her music. So these are tribal people.
It was really
from any place.
A fusion.
Primitive culture. They can then really communicate.
I know. A beautiful people.
A great fusion at that moment, you know, I still remember.
I'd like to talk more about performance and poetry, specifically poetry and theater. Yusuf, you translated Gilgamesh for the stage. What poetic tools did you rely on in the process?
Translating Gilgamesh. I was given that as a sort of gift by Chad Gracia. And we realized that we would have to re-envision the idea of Gilgamesh for the stage And I was sort of really challenged by the idea that I had to find the first line first. And that by finding the first line, I'd enter that psyche, which I had read Gilgamesh through the years, you know. And we have to create a Gilgamesh that would work on the stage. That was the challenge. And I was lucky for some reason because I would write maybe 10 pages, send those 10 pages to Chad, and he would get a group of actors together, and I would hear the words come back to me. So I wasn't really writing in isolation. Given the economics of the theater, there are quite a few characters in Gilgamesh, but finally it's going to be produced at Constellation Theater in D.C.
Great.
In May.
Wonderful.
Did you change the script when you got the feedback in any way?
Sometimes it was just aligned, and that was instructive. Because I was so close to the text I was writing, you know, there in a room, and I wanted it to come alive. And sometimes the text only comes alive in the mouths of the characters. That's what I thought.
Here's the audio theater troupe, actors seen unseen, performing Gilgamesh, a verse play.
Who are you?
I am. I am.
Are you a murderer running away from the laws of man and the gods?
I am. I am a king.
Who are you when you are not swollen with dreams?
I am a king. I am Gilgamesh.
You are mad. Gilgamesh is a king, and you are clothed in tattered skins, almost an animal.
I could not surrender his friendship.
Why are you here?
I am.
Yes. 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 When I laugh, my laughter comes back to me threefold at the threshold, like an echo of mystery from across the sea. When I laugh, my laughter comes back to me with a lover's sweet perchance and goat-footed romance to make the soul dance. My laughter comes back to me like a bright bird from across the sea. When I laugh, my laughter comes back to me outside death's doorway at the edge of this bay. And I am almost happy when my laughter comes back to me.
You're listening to the Circumference podcast series. That was Gilgamesh, a verse play by Yusuf Komunyakaa. Shubhad, could you tell me about the relationship between theater and poetry in contemporary Calcutta?
I tell you precisely that I'm not a theater man, but I can hardly spend a single week without watching theater.
Mm.
And it's like whenever I have a free weekend, I feel that I feel drawn towards theater. Mm. And in India, you know, most of the important, the remarkable poets, those who are, you know, great for their works of poetry, in one way or another, are connected with theater.
Yeah. All over the world.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
All over the world. In Greece, for example, in ancient times, you have theater and poetry together. The greatest poet of India is not the greatest theater personality, but has written some great plays. I'm talking about Tagore. He has written some abstract plays which really created a new genre for in the Indian theater. It had that subterranean influence, you know. It worked so deeply in the psyche of the Indian theater that I believe that most of the contemporary Bengali and Indian poets are getting disconnected today. I mean, for last 15 maybe last two decades, they're not so much interested in theater. Possibly the theater is losing something which was there before. I mean, something great which was there before. But for example, Badal Sarkar was a great writer, a great playwright. His contemporary poets were very much interested in his works, in his theater. But now I find that there is a gap between the Bengali theater and Bengali poetry. the poets are not somehow attracted towards theater that much. But I personally take a lot of, you know, inspiration, energy from theater. Mm-hmm. For example, Bratto Bosu, who is a very good playwright now, I find his plays, his theater is different. Mm-hmm. It's a very, you know, down-to-earth kind of poetry, which finds reflected in his works. It's not that kind of lyrical kind of poetry that you find in Tagore's works mm-hmm. or even in Bahadur Shaka's works. Mm-hmm. But it's a new kind of poetry. It's a new kind of theater. So one is matching with the other. Mm-hmm. But I always take special interest in theater because I think that I can steal something from them, you know.
Kutsum, would you like to add to that?
Well, I always wondered that why the prose people are not close to theater, why poets are so close to theater, or theater personality are close to poetry. I don't know, that's always all of, look at the Lorca. Mm-hmm. Lorca, one time, Lorca's plays were playing more in the world than Shakespeare at one time.
Right. It's very interesting because there used to be a theater group called Inverse Theater here in the city, and that Chad Rossi, a matter of fact, was associated with that theater, and the attempt was to actually bring language back to the theater as opposed to merely plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you one interesting thing about Bengali theater in Calcutta. In 60s and in early 70s, we had three Bengali playwrights. Yeah. One is called Henrik Ibsen. He was known as Bengali playwright, Henrik Ibsen. The second was Bertolt Brecht. And the third was Rabindranath Tagore, who was really Bengali. And now we have a new young playwright in Bengali. His name is Shakespeare. Now Shakespeare's Macbeth, we have five versions of Macbeth. It's a power play, it's a political play, and now the political situation is absolutely different in Calcutta. And
I thought the British would have brought Shakespeare before.
With the Arcane language, people didn't touch them.
Right. It's a new language.
Yeah, now they change
Shakespeare language. In new language.
How about someone like Peter Brooks?
Yeah, Peter Brooks. You mean Mahabharata?
Yeah.
But, you know, our in India also, the primitive India's, like Iliad and Odyssey, our Ramayana and Mahabharata, those are in poetic form, and those are plays, completely plays in poetic form.
Epic plays.
Those are epic plays in 5,000 or whatever years ago. Yeah, so she starts with play and poetry.
Kutsum, do you think that there's a kinship between African-American oral poetries and traditions of Indian epic within contemporary Indian poetry?
I don't know. Indian is a term of Indian is very misconception because there is nothing called Indian in my mind.
American.
America is a very much more uniform society because India is like Europe. So if I go from one state to another state, our language changes,
food
changes, culture changes. So basically, there is no coherent Indian culture. Mm-hmm. Whatever you see is made by either Islamic or the British force put together a culture.
That's interesting. How do you see Bengali operating within a multicultural society then?
Bengal came in contact with the British people at first. So Bengali literature flourished like a renaissance period. And a lot of poets, writers, and famous film director, which you know that Satyajit Ray, you know, they all came from Bengal. And then Bengal, because that time other languages didn't have their own writers, so Bengali literature is to translate it into other languages. And slowly, when those languages develop their own writers, people don't like to read translation, believe it or not. It's true, all right? That's a true thing. So in mainstream language, you know, only the literary people, they read these things for fun or something. So, like, even in Bengali language, there is one country named Bangladesh where 95% people are Muslim. So, their national language is Bengali. So, people get a job learning Bengali. We are from West Bengal. but the Hindu majority portion. So in though our language is much richer than there, all the literary form and everything, but Bangladesh is developing their own language.
Mm-hmm.
They are bringing the nuances of the Muslim religion and other things. 50 years from now, their literature will rule because that's a national language.
Mm-hmm.
That's the national language. And I don't know, they'll be by the flow, they will become a uniform pot, and a lot of new things will come out, and interesting thing will come out.
In addition to that, what he has said, I'd like to tell you one thing: that Bengali is now enjoying the fourth position.
Fifth.
Yeah, it varies. Maybe fourth or fifth, or he's saying sixth. It's not because of us from West Bengal, but it is because of the Bangladeshis of Bangladesh.
Population, share population, by language.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have now, 25 crores of people? How do you translate into millions?
Large number of people speak Bengali language, like Chinese. But Chinese people speaks only in China, something Bengali. Bengali is not a universal language.
Mm-hmm.
Like French or Spanish or English is a universal language.
Mm-hmm.
But Bengali is the sheer population.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be fourth, fifth language, but it's not a universal
right.
language.
Okay, that's. I'm not getting into this debate, but the masters of the language, as they have decided, you know, because it's not that the population that matters, but it's also the quality that matters, you know. And if you consider French, Italian, German, Chinese, English, so why not Bengali, Arabic, I mean. Why not Bengali?
Yeah.
So, it's Bengali is...
Bengali language is a very strong poetic culture. Like African-American poetry before Yusef and Richard Rabb's generation was more of a protest poem. And Bengali poets left protest poem many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you write protest poem, Bengali,
mm-hmm.
Bengali people don't like it. Basically, you don't have a reader. Like French poetry is much more developed, right? So... You can argue with that, this thing. This is a very debatable thing.
Well, I'm very much interested in that fact.
Like Yusef told me one day that I agree that we become so close friends that when a blood comes off of anyone's, you know, body, it's red. Poetry is a poetry. When he writes that Tudor Street and the last two lines of the thing, when a white man or a white soldier and black soldiers makes love to a same prostitute in the Vietnam, their sweat and the semen gets mixed unknowingly. All right? That's the poetry.
Is that what's in that poem?
I'm giving a gist of it,
right.
The lyrical thing. You know, but inside, one room gets into another room, you know?
Right.
It reminds me of that famous line by Octavia Paz, you know, that India is that country where you find that God, man, and animal... all are eating from the same plate. That's another image. You know, it's not only the image of semen and sweat, you know, but also.
But a lot of times, like before Yusef and I'm not talking about the Langston Hughes. So obviously, he's kind of.
Why not Langston Hughes? Was very
different poet. But most of the African American poet were designated protest poet, and they are always writing things about.
But I tell you, I always
that
like protest.
That has a
even the protest in American poetry.
But when you cross the place, then you lose.
And what
your
both of us said is bullshit. I believe that protest cannot die.
Yes.
Protest is to be born again and again in the world.
Right.
You have a different
form. He's wrong. Absolutely, according to me, I'm sorry. But what he said, absolutely right. That. The kind of protest poems that the Bangladeshi people wrote for freedom, that is one generation kind of thing. But now you have different form of protest. Even a young woman standing before mirror and just doing her hair can be a protest poem. How you are protesting, not necessarily you have to protest like this, you know.
That's
not always occupying Wall Street kind of thing, but you can also protest in a very subtle manner.
Yeah.
So
the fact that one is writing, sometimes that's a protest.
Yeah. Writing is protest. Yeah. Writing is protest. And also love.
Of course. Hand in hand.
Yeah.
I was really interested in our discussion about Bengali within a framework of other languages. How important is it as a poet to use Shubad to have your work translated into non-dominant languages in India? I know your work has been translated into English and in French, but what about to your neighbor?
When you travel from one state to another, mm-hmm. the language also travels mm-hmm. and stops traveling. Mm-hmm. You know, then you get into another language. Mm-hmm. It's like a river. Mm-hmm. The language changes after every 3 miles of geographical mm-hmm. position, you know. Even English does in America. Mm-hmm. So it goes on, it goes on. It changes and it goes. It changes, it goes. Mm-hmm. So the point is, in India, you have so many languages. It's not just 24 languages as approved of by the Constitution of India. Mm-hmm. But we have as many as 1,637 languages wow. spoken in the country.
Yeah.
And the languages are also dying. Mm-hmm. All over the world. The BBC had a documentary on languages mm-hmm. dying out, you know. It's like river. Mm-hmm. Rivers are dying in the world. Languages are also dying. In India, very recently, only 2 years back, we witnessed the last surviving speaker of Bo. Mm-hmm. It's Andamanese language. It's called Bo. It mm-hmm. died with the death of the last surviving speaker. She was 80 years old. Mm-hmm. And last time when there was tsunami, mm-hmm. she saved herself and the language by climbing a hilltop. Uh-oh. Understand? So she saved her life and the life of the language climbing a hilltop. But this time she died mm-hmm. a natural death. And she was the last surviving speaker. So I believe that languages are also dying. And I think that as we live in a multilingual society, so it's our duty to have mm-hmm. a communication. Mm-hmm. Without communication, without translating each other, we are nowhere.
Exactly.
So we have to have mm-hmm. translations. That's very important.
The only way.
I can tell you, Yusuf came to Calcutta. After his coming to Calcutta, his poetry became more popular. Mm-hmm. So people were borrowing books from American Center, his books. They were looking for his books. All of his books are not available in India. Mm-hmm. But I think they can be made available. Mm-hmm. And we have a plan in next book fair. We are going to have a book of his poems in Bengali translations. And we are planning, I and Gautam, we are planning to bring out a collection of Yusuf's poems in Bengali translations to be launched at the next book fair in Calcutta.
Wonderful. Yeah. I think that's a great segue into listening to some of your poems. Yusuf, can we start with you? Would you read a poem?
I'm just going to recite one off the top of my head. Ode to the Maggot. Brother the Blowfly and Godhead, you work magic over battlefields and slabs of bad pork and flop houses. Yes, you go to the root of all things. You are sound and mathematical. Jesus Christ, you're merciless with the truth. Ontological and lustrous, you cast spells on beggars and kings. Behind the stone door, a Caesar's tomb, a split trench and a field of ragweed. No decree or creed cannot lull you as you take every living thing apart. Little master of earth, no one gets to heaven without going through you first.
Oh, that's great.
Gautam, would you read a poem for us next, please?
It's about my daughter, whom we adopted. Her name is Uma. Uma means someone born from the earth. It's an Indian language. Uma Thurman, Uma, U-M-A, means the someone born from the earth. In Sanskrit, in Bengali, same, Hindi. Uma, who lights this candle? Who throws her in the roaring river? She floats alone from wave to wave. I only see tip of that flame coming towards me. On this gloomy evening, I wet both feet under cold water. The tired sun dips behind the river bank, and here she comes floating, wave to wave. I pick her up and run through the dark, winding roads. Her little life keep throbbing inside my palms. Look today, our home is filled with her magical light.
Wonderful. Shubha, would you close our conversation with a poem of yours, please?
This is called Where is the Good Place? This poem I wrote, you know, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, when my son was only 3 years old. And in my Calcutta home, you know, when he was so young, you know, young child, you know, 3 years old, and just one Sunday afternoon, he got up from his nap and started, you know, winning around him. And it was very difficult for me to appease him, you know. I don't know what he was wanting. But suddenly he asked me, take me to a good place. Mm. And nothing else. And this poem was born out of it. Where is the good place? When he got up from his nap, my 3-year-old son said, Papa, will you take me to a good place? Surprised, I looked at a 3-year-old, at 3-year-old eyes, 3-year-old lips, at trickling drops of sweat. I said, go get the zoo. The lion's gotten very hungry. The tigers chase the deer. He said, no, take me to a good place. He went to the next room, cried a bit, came back with a tattered Karl Marx calendar and said, we'll take this grandpa too, by train, by boat. Hey, Papa, Papa, won't you go to a good place? When I took him to Victoria, he said, no, this is no good. When I took him to the river, he said, it's only a river. When I gave him ice cream, he walked along whinnying. Disgusted, I took him home around 8 and saw tattered curl marks lying abandoned on the floor. I told my son, listen, this grandpa said he'd take us to a good place too. That Sunday, there was no train, no boat. Quiet for a moment, thinking who knows what, he began winning again. I gave him a ball. I gave him a robot. I gave him a ship. Right when I was wondering whether to give him a spanking, he asked the old-time big question. Hey, Papa, tomorrow, will you take me to a good place tomorrow?
You've been listening to the Circumference podcast series. I'm your host, Montana Ray. I'd like to say thank you to Gutam Datta and also to Yusuf Kumanyaka and Shubhad Sarkar.
On my journey now, Mount Zion, my journey now, Mount Zion. I wouldn't take nothing, Mount Zion, for my journey now, Mount Zion. One day, I was walking along. Well, the elements open and the love come down, Mount Zion. On my journey now, Mount Zion, my journey now, Mount Zion. I wouldn't take nothing, Mount Zion, for my journey now, Mount Zion. You can talk about me just as much as you please. Well, I'll talk about you when I get on my knees, Mount Zion. On my journey now, Mount Zion, my journey now, Mount Zion. I wouldn't take nothing, Mount Zion, for my journey now, Mount Zion. I went into the valley and I didn't go to stay. Well, my soul got happy and I stayed all day, Mount Zion. On my journey now, Mount Zion, my journey now, Mount Zion. I wouldn't take nothing, Mount Zion, for my journey now, Mount Zion. On my journey now, Mount Zion, my journey now, Mount Zion. I wouldn't take nothing, Mount Zion, for my journey now.